DW Africa Link.
When a government tightens control over civil society, is it protecting its people or protecting its power? Zimbabwe's recently passed NGO law, officially the Private Voluntary Organizations PVO Amendment Bill, has triggered fierce debate. The government says it's a necessary tool to combat terrorism and stop foreign meddling. But critics see something far more troubling: an attempt to silence independent voices, restrict activism, and shrink democratic space. So, is this security or suppression? That's what's coming up. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa has signed into law the Private Voluntary Organizations PVO Amendment Act, a controversial law giving government increased control over the operations of non-governmental organizations, NGOs. The law allows government to deregister organizations accused of political activity, replace their leadership, and closely monitor foreign funding. Authorities say the new law is aimed at curbing money laundering and terrorism financing. But human rights groups warn it will severely restrict the work of civil society organizations, many of which rely on foreign funding. Now, to discuss more on this, I'm joined by Arnold Tsunga, an international law expert and DW's correspondent in Harare, Privilege Mushaniri. Now, I will start with you, a Privilege, as someone who is on ground in Zimbabwe. Can you tell us more about this bill?
Thank you, Josie. The bill that was signed into law by the president control the operations of the non-governmental organizations. Particularly, they are looking at issues of the government, in fact, claims that it is looking at curbing money laundering and terrorism financing by enacting this law. One of the few things that it will do, the law, it is to deregister organizations that are accused of political activity, replace their leadership, and closely monitor any foreign funding or the funding of those organizations. And there's been an outcry, you know, from human rights groups then to say this act is going to severely restrict the work of civil society organizations, many of which they rely on foreign funding for their operations. So part of it, this law will require civil society organizations now to register with the registrar of PVOs, and he will determine whether they should register an organization or not. And then through this act as well, I think it's all about trying to control the operations of civic society more than curbing what they are talking about, to say money laundering and terrorism, because there's not been any organization that we have had in the past which has been accused or which has been alleged to be financing terrorism or doing any activities that has to do with money laundering.
Right. Maybe we can hear also from Arnold Tsunga. You are an international law expert. Can you just briefly maybe break down this Private Voluntary Organizations Amendment Act for us?
Civil society in Zimbabwe has been operating under about four regimes. The PVO, which is the Private Voluntary Organization, which is one of them. What we have now is the Private Voluntary Organization Amendment Act. The other regime was operating as trusts, to say if you want to operate in Zimbabwe as a charitable organization, you can register a trust. So that was falling outside the supervision and oversight of the PVO board. Then you also had what we refer to as VESITAS, which is basically voluntary associations of individuals who just come together for a common purpose and bind their own relationship on the basis of an association's constitution. That was legal. And then the final one would be a public benefit company under the Companies Act, where the company is not for profit, but it's for public benefit. So what this amendment to the PVO Act has now done is to unify all oversight and regulatory processes of charitable organizations under the Private Voluntary Organization Act as amended, and under the direct supervision of the registrar of the PVO board, who reports directly to the minister, and that minister being the Minister of Public and Social Services. So that is the fundamental change, that the minister now has a very strong control over the operations of all civil society organizations in Zimbabwe. And what privilege is already given you is some of the excessive powers to unleash the state agencies, such as the Finance Intelligence Unit of the Reserve Bank, the Serious Economic Crime Squad of the law enforcement agents, and to be able to spy or supervise or intrusively look at the work of NGOs, including their financial transactions, to look at where the sources of their funding is coming from. But the minister can also make a decision in situations where he or she feels that the PVOs are not operating according to how the government wants, to suspend the executive members, you know, the board, the governance structure, but also the senior management of the PVOs. And once they're suspended, to then impose provisional trustees and provisional managers to run the affairs of the NGO and be paid out of the resources of that NGO. So effectively, it's deploying people who are aligned to the minister to take over the responsibility of running the NGO and using the donor funds for the purpose of what the minister desires and sees as the purpose. So, and then there is also the question of introducing what we call criminalizing existing NGOs. So if you were operating as a trust before, or you are operating as a universitas, an association, if the minister deems your work to be of charitable nature under the PVO, then you are obliged to register as a PVO. And if you don't register, you are deemed to be committing a criminal offense. So beyond being charged with crime and facing the possibility of jail term or serious financial penalties, you are also facing what they are now introducing as civil penalties, that from the time you are supposed to register and you have not registered, you are fined $100 per day until you get registered. And then the minister and the board of the NGOs have the right to then expropriate resources from your financial institution. They've also introduced a situation where the government can get into a cooperative arrangement with a like-minded government elsewhere to carry out a joint investigation of the work of a PVO or those who are seen as having significant influence over that PVO. And the whole idea is that it would then allow them to trace whether there's financing of terrorism or money laundering. So it's really, really a very serious act in terms of the impact on civil society and the criminalization of normal civil society behavior.
Right. Now, the way you just explained it, Arnold, it's something that I really, really wonder if an ordinary Zimbabwean actually knows how important this act is. But In your own opinion, I know you've been following what is happening in Zimbabwe. Then, are Zimbabwean NGOs involved in money laundering and terrorism, like Privilege earlier mentioned, what government gave reasons for, or this is just about something else?
You know, there's been this delinkage between the beneficiaries of the work of NGOs and I think the human rights movement in particular, the NGO movement, humanitarian movement themselves. Because when they do these things of humanitarian assistance or protection of human rights, they have a feeling that the ordinary citizens who are the beneficiaries of this work tend to think that they have a they and us perception that these are workers of NGOs. And in the process, concern I have is that there has been over a period of time a delinkage between the human rights humanitarian movement and the communities that the beneficiaries that they serve, precisely because of the fact that when communities get, you know, this attack on civil society, they don't feel that it's an attack on a service delivery to themselves. They don't realize that when the protection of human rights and humanitarian needs is cut through repressive pieces of legislation, the biggest impact is on them as communities. And so as a result, it is appearing as a fight between the government and human rights or NGOs and humanitarian groups.
Now, Privileges, you are on the ground and reporting on the civil and political issues in the country. Do you get the sense that people actually understand this, and how valid, if they do, are the fears about this law, looking at what you have observed so far?
From what Arnold has just spoken about, the lack of understanding of the work of civic society and NGOs, put it into different sectors. There are those who are into humanitarian, on the humanitarian side, those that are known to maybe give food distribution, those that are into sexual and reproductive rights, into communities who give out maybe contraceptives and like. And then there's the sector that is there to promote civic and political rights in Zimbabwe. But there is not that understanding. The beneficiaries only understand that there are NGOs that can help me to get food. There's an NGO that can help me to get health services. There's an NGO that can help me probably to get representation in court when I need something. But that understanding is not there. Then coming to the fears that the civic society is having in terms of this law, it is really valid. Observing the political developments that have happened, if you look at 2018 to date, and even the latest elections that happened in 2023 coming up now, you are looking at a situation where you have a government that is seeking to extend its hegemony over the society. You look at what has happened to the opposition at the moment. The opposition has been decimated to the extent that we no longer have any meaningful opposition in parliament. Secondly, they are using all sorts of weaponry to extend the hegemony over a society. Look at the opposition. It's either they dangle sweeteners before the members of parliament in the opposition. We saw the recalling of members of parliament from parliament where there were no valid reasons. You have someone who was not even appointed to be leading as a secretary general of a political party being upheld as the leader of that party by the courts. So you are having courts being weaponized to pass certain judgments that are upholding certain decisions that are questionable, where they just seek to extend their control over the opposition. Go now to maybe those critical voices that are remaining to say, look, this is wrong, what is happening. They either use force to cow down those people, or they either use money to buy those people. So it's a whole lot of things that have happened in the past year or so, where now we now have a very divided society, where in parliament we don't have a strong opposition. In the general citizenry, people are afraid to speak out, because when you speak out, it's either you're arrested or certain threats come towards you. So this is, and if you look at the civic society, it's the last bastion that was remaining in terms of further shrinking of the civic space. So it's justified and valid when these fears of wanting to have control over civic society are arising.
Right. A privilege. As you were talking, I just remembered now what you're saying, that obviously there's carrots being dangled and all, because I understand before this law was passed, there was serious lobbying against the law. Then one would just wonder what could be the reason then why the president went ahead to sign the bill into law. Like, is there any listening at all when it comes to the people in the high above? Are they even listening to citizens? One would wonder.
The issue is, if you look at why this law was passed, we can still go back to the fact that you look politically, what is happening in parliament right now, and even with the ruling party and in government, the appetite to want to extend the presidential terms, the appetite to want to fiddle with the constitution and amend the constitution. We have seen a leaked document recently now where the Minister of Justice is seeking to push through a bill in parliament where they want to amend the constitution to extend the presidential term, which ends in 2028, by 3 more years. And so if you are looking at all these things, we then see where everything is leading to. There was lobbying against this law. Civic society lobbied vigorously against this law, and people were consulted. Sometimes you see consultations happening through parliament in various communities. Sometimes you then wonder whether it is genuine, because at the end of the day, the voices of the people are not carried through. So passing this law, it is only aiding in maybe the plans that we are seeing and the political contestations that are happening within the ruling party, where we are hearing now that they want to push through a bill that will seek, one, to extend the presidential limits, where the presidential term is ending in 2028, but they want to extend it by 3 more years. So is the parliament as well. So the current term of parliament will also be extended concurrently with the presidential term with 3 years. We won't have elections in 2028 if that bill is passed. They also want to remove the registration of voters from the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to the Department of the Registrar of Birth and Death Registration. That's where they want to put it. So there are these things. You then want to start, you know, putting all these things together. You see that maybe with all these plans that, and the talk of all these things of trying to amend the constitution and everything, the civic society is the strongest voice that could oppose the all these ambitions.
Now, Arnold, as we wrap up our discussion, you've really said the law is disastrous in its current form. Now, you spoke also of the local remedies that could be used, but is there any way possible to find common ground between government oversight and civil society freedom, like maybe a committee that can be put in place to be a bridge between these two to ensure that at least something needs to be done? Because the local remedies, I assume that you're talking of, is even people protesting, and we all know in Zimbabwe that's not possible. So what common ground then do you, in your opinion, suggest could be taken to at least try and counter whatever that is negative that is happening against the citizens of Zimbabwe.
Yes. No, you are dead right that the options for ordinary Zimbabweans, they continue diminishing, primarily as a result of government behavior, not necessarily as a result of absence of the constitutional and legal framework. Because the constitution and the legal framework is very clear that Zimbabweans have got a right to freedom of association, to freedom of assembly, movement, to hold political opinions, to political participation, to protest. So the gap that is there is, you know, the mismatch between what is allowable in terms of government practices and what the constitution actually provides for, since the constitution does not self-execute. And as lawyers, we have a number of people we are still representing who were involved in, you know, demonstrations in the past, in meetings in the past, including those who were caught in what we call a dragnet. As lawyers, we call it a dragnet when innocent people going about their affairs get entangled and get picked up simply because there's another group of people who may have called for a demonstration. So, for example, what is very popular now in Zimbabwe is the fact that Geza had called for a 31st March demonstration. And many people did not participate in the demonstration. And initially, as lawyers, we hadn't seen a problem until we started getting requests from some people within the state apparatus that there were so many people. I think it's more than 102 nationally. It could come even to about 105 who were picked up in what the lawyers refer to as dragnets. And dragnets simply means someone goes to work on the 31st of March. And then when you are going to work, you get picked up by the police simply because there may be a demonstration, or you're coming from work at the end of the day. And then you also get picked up, and then you get detained. And then for some reason, the legal system is unable to then distinguish who was a demonstrator and who was not. And then everyone gets in custody. A number of them, more than 100, are still in custody for now. And even when you're in custody for protesting peacefully, that again, there's a question whether that is a violation of the law or not. So that is the reality of Zimbabweans. And the use of the legal system as an instrument of fear, as an instrument of weaponization against what ordinarily is lawful behavior, is the reality. This is why I think the constitutional litigation is important, because at least you're fighting within the legal system, but without exposing innocent people to violations of their constitutional rights. But then in that context, this is why I'm very skeptical whether the environment allows for effective expression by a critical mass of people to demonstrate is operating in an anti-democratic way, even though Zimbabwe is supposed to be a multi-party democracy.
Arnold Tsunga, an international law expert and our own DW correspondent in Harare, Privilege Mushaniri, many thanks for joining us.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a crucial part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. You can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabi. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.